It's day two of our Bay Retreat, 2.5, somewhere in there. And we continue to have a look at Dogen's Ocean Mudra Samadhi. In it, he quotes the Buddha. The Buddha said, "Elements come together and form this body. At the time of appearing, elements appear. At the time of disappearing, elements disappear. When elements appear, I do not say, I appear. When elements disappear, I do not say, I disappear. Past moments and future moments do not arise sequentially. Past elements and future elements do not arise in alignment. This is the meaning of Ocean Mudra Samadhi." So yesterday, Diane talked a bit about the title itself, this Ocean Mudra Samadhi. And I'd like to add a few comments about that from my point of view. So this whole chapter by Dogen, this whole writing, is about things appearing and disappearing, things coming into the universe and leaving. Things arising and things going away. And examining this in exquisite detail to try to understand how it is that all of this is here. So this matter of the ocean mudra. Mudra refers to, generally I think of it as referring to a bodily position. So we have the mudra that we hold our hands in when we do zazen. And we have there are the mudras that the various Buddhist statues carry or present. The one on our altar now is the fear...
Dispelling fear.
Dispelling fear mudra. Mm-hmm. So it's a bodily position. How does the ocean take a bodily position? The ocean, this great, vast formlessness that is in this writing represents the source. So here is Dogen looking at this shift between formlessness and taking form. And he wraps it all up in samadhi. And we want so much to distinguish between them. This is form, this is formlessness. There must be a source somewhere if we could get to it. And Dogen challenges us again and again in almost everything he writes to synthesize these, to bring them together. And so in order to clarify the Buddha's words that I just read, he offers... For example, this paragraph. The Buddha said, "At the time of appearing, elements appear. This appearing does not leave any mark of appearing. Therefore, appearing does not enter one's perception or knowledge. And thus the Buddha said, I do not say, I appear. It is not that there is someone else who perceives or thinks that the person appears. It is just that you see beyond and you drop away your initial understanding." So did that clarify it for you? And really, I'm not sure that anyone can. Dogen offers his view as the Buddha did, because it's what teachers do. It's what we do for one another, to point the way. But we don't need to despair if these feel like things that just zing past us, these words. Because we don't rely on words in order to do this practice. And as I mentioned last night, even Dogen gets it wrong sometimes. It's not his fault he didn't know about penguins. but we don't have to rely on that. We have our own lives. This is the way in which we can take the measure of the universe of our life in this world. So it's available to us to notice how things appear and how they disappear. It's very subtle. It requires some close scrutiny. Fortunately, we have hours and hours to do that. And so to notice, to come down to the very fine grain of the moment, and to notice as thoughts bubble up. And I think of them as bubbling. To me, it's kind of like a tar pit or lava boiling, you know, this heavy sort of lifting of something heavy with air underneath it, and it boils up into a bubble and then pops and the air is released. And how there's this this sensation before a thought actually makes itself known, there's a sort of impulse behind it that you can feel starting to come forward, and how it makes its way to the surface and then there's the thought, and then how it dissipates. And we can notice how that happens, and how that's a little different from how sounds come to us, because there's not, as I experience it, an impulse behind sounds. But there is a way that they are met. And where is that? Is it in the ear? Is it out in the air somewhere? Is it inside our heads? Is it where, you know, the sound, the seagull or whatever, is it there? Where does this sound happen? We have the opportunity to examine all of this, just as Dogen did, and see what it is for us. This is his invitation in the Ocean Mudra Samadhi. He writes, "The ocean is where all elements come together. It is not limited to deep water. This being so, the monk's question, 'What is the ocean?' refers to an ocean that is not known by humans and devas." Here is this place that cannot be known. Doesn't mean that it can't be experienced, but it's a not known place. And that's not a mistake of ours, that somehow we should know it if only we were good enough. It cannot be known by humans or devas. Only Buddhas. As I was thinking about this, for some reason my mind traveled back to the times when I used to do a lot of diving in the ocean, scuba diving. And for a while it was quite a passion. I did many dives, generally in warmer waters than here. There's this one kind of dive that is takes place along a sort of a continental shelf, the place where the shallower waters of the ocean that surround land suddenly drop off and plunge into the depths miles deep, and you can drop down to this to the shelf and explore down and down. The limits of recreational diving are about 100 feet. That's quite far down. As you descend, the sunlight grows dimmer and dimmer. And the creatures that live on this shelf change. That is, they're different ones further down than what you usually see up above. And there's this, when you get down to about 100 feet, it's so dim. And the pressure is great on the ears, so the sound is muffled. Larger creatures swim about there. So these shadows, these sort of indistinct shadows pass by. Maybe a tuna, maybe a sea bass, or even a shark. Different world. And you float there, weightless, floating over an abyss that is miles deep, looking down, nothing but darkness. Can't be known. And there's this, for me, there was this sort of irrational desire to just keep floating down, down and down into that wonderful darkness, weightless. Nothing there to be concerned about, just drifting forever. Could imagine that happening. But the thing about the ocean is that in the depths, there is no power. The great waves on the surface have the ability to smash into rock, tear it down, bring down trees and houses, leap up into the air. It's tremendous power. Down in the depths, not so much. If the ocean wants to accomplish anything, there need to be waves on the surface. Yesterday, Diane read the section about the corpses in the ocean. That's this translation. It's a different one than she used. Mine is by Ta-Nehisi. And in Dogen's commentary about this, he says, "The monk's statement, 'Those who have stopped breathing do not remain as they are. Why?' This statement appears to be a question. But it is actually an understanding of what it is. When doubt arises, just encounter doubt." This why is the rich part, not the answer, but the asking of the question, the encountering of the doubt. How important that is. To know it for ourselves, whatever it is that arises. I noticed in my room there's a painting over the bed of a down east waterfront, like a wharf with boats, buildings. And if I turn around and look the other way, there's the waterfront. And how there is a true meeting of me and this painting. But it's not the same thing as me meeting the view out the window. And that also is not the same thing as actually being at the wharf. Can we recognize this? We make these stories about what our lives are. And then we make the mistake of thinking that that is our life. And we see what trouble this gets the world into. And we're not exempt. As humans, we fall into this again and again, and it's an important part of our practice to notice that this happens and to hold those stories lightly and provisionally as the temporary maps that they are, that can never be the thing itself. So, again, thinking about this ocean mudra samadhi and about diving in the ocean, I remembered a poem that I had come upon some years back. And when I read over it, I thought it might be worthwhile to offer it, or at least part. It's long, a long poem, but I'd like to read part of it. Oops, I have it in the other room. Sorry. This is a poem by Adrian Rich, and it's called Diving into the Wreck. First, having read the book of myths, and loaded the camera, and checked the edge of the knife blade, I put on the body armor of black rubber, the absurd flippers, the grave and awkward mask. I am having to do this not like Cousteau with his assiduous team aboard the sun-flooded schooner, but here alone. There is a ladder. The ladder is always there, hanging innocently close to the side of the schooner. We know what it is for, we who have used it. Otherwise, it's a piece of maritime floss, some sundry equipment. I go down, rung after rung, and still the oxygen immerses me, the blue light, the clear atoms of our human air. I go down. My flippers cripple me. I crawl like an insect down the ladder, and there is no one to tell me when the ocean will begin. First, the air is blue, and then it is bluer, and then green, and then black. I am blacking out, and yet my mask is powerful. It pumps my blood with power. The sea is another story. The sea is not a question of power. I have to learn alone to turn my body without force in the deep element. And now, it's easy to forget what I came for. Among so many who have always lived here, swaying their crenellated fans between the reefs. And besides, you breathe differently down here. I came to explore the wreck. The words are purposes. The words are maps. I came to see the damage that was done and the treasures that prevail. I stroke the beam of my lamp slowly along the flank of something more permanent than fish or weed. The thing I came for, the wreck, not the story of the wreck. The thing itself and not the myth. This thing that we come for, we think we know what it is, we've read the myth. We're ready with our knives and cameras. We do the dive. We know what the ladder is for. And then we get to it. A wreck. What a mess. This is what we are. This is what's available to us to explore. And the amazing thing is, as a diver, I know this, that in Florida, at least, they actually sink old wrecked boats on purpose to create new reefs, because when there's a wreck on the bottom, all kinds of life come to it. Life stirs again. It gives it a place to begin. It's a very rich environment. So worthwhile. Exploring this deep wreck to see what treasure prevails there. Last night, Fran told us about the empty boat in the moonlight. And this, too, we can immediately make into a myth. Ours is a wreck. It's not a beautiful boat floating in the moonlight. But meeting the wreck as it is and not the myth, the boat floats itself. No need to do a thing. Thank you. So this is the opportunity.